Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante along with Landon Tengwall, all ready to talk some Penn State Rutgers football. The Nittany Lions coming off their 27-6 win over the Scarlet Knights on Saturday. So we'll talk all about that. Landon, though, we were talking off the air, as we always do. You were telling me Rutgers holds kind of a special place in your heart from your football career.
Yeah, so I figured we give the listeners a little bit of a funny story time here, taking you back to 2021 against Rutgers. It's my freshman year. So that was, and some of the fans were aware, we had a bunch of guys out with the flu, but it wasn't too big of a story. We won 28-0. We handled business. But I figure we'll take it back and kind of set the scene for you. So, you know, we're coming in the week. We're, you know, 2021 was kind of a iffy season for us, and I think I'm third string left tackle at this point. Well, next thing I know, Rasheed Walker, who's on the Packers now, goes down. So it's all right, whatever. I think Olu has a concussion or something at this point. He's out. Next thing I know, I'm pretty much up. And I'm like, oh, crap. If any, you know, when you're a freshman, you know, you're looking around. You're like, oh, what am I going to do? So Caden Wallace at the time was the other tackle. And he had the flu earlier in the week. Well, I'm not really sure if he's going to play or not. You know, it's one of those things. We walk in Thursday into the training facility. It's like an infirmary in there. I mean, we have like 20 guys getting IVs. Everybody looks like they're dying. It's like, oh, crap. Like, we're about to be without half the team. So next thing you know, we get to the hotel. Guys, everybody's being in, you know, quarantining rooms. We're having to get separate rooms for sick guys and figure it all out. I mean, we probably have 25 guys that are feeling bad. You know, we get into the game. I think Cliff may have started the game, and he was not feeling well. He came out, and then everybody kind of remembered my roommate, Christian Veyu, came in, had a really good game. But before the game, like I said, still not certain I'm going to play. And Caden Wallace is kind of in and around. I haven't really seen him. I'm nervous. You know, of course you want to play, but at the same time, you're like, I'm nervous. I don't really want to play. Just can you do it instead? So I pass him. I go up and, you know, you have team breakfast. It was a 12 p.m. game. You have team breakfast and you kind of have some time to go back to your room for a little bit, you know, get your stuff together and just have a little bit of time to do whatever you do before the game. Well, I pass Caden on the way up to my room and I look at him. I go, What's the word? What's happening? He looks at me dead in my eyes, and I could tell he's sick as a dog. He goes, you're going to play today. And I say, okay, all right. And I walk back to my room, and I sit on the edge of my bed, and I put my head in my hands, man. I'm sitting there. I'm like, Lord, please, just help me today. So sure enough, Caden's in the locker room throwing up before the game. He's like, I'm going to give it a try. I'm going to give it a try. So he's puking, throwing up. And I'm like, oh, man. So after one drive, I get thrown in there. But it actually turned out to be pretty good, like I said. And my man CV came in. Shout out to Christian. He came in, had a good game. And we hit a business against Rutgers. But I thought that was a little funny story to start off the show today. It was a good memory for everybody on the team. And we came away with the W, so that's all that matters.
In hindsight, it's a good memory, but leading up to it, nervous as all get out, huh?
Yeah, no, you ain't kidding. You ain't kidding, but definitely an experience I'll remember for a while. But hey, let's get into Rutgers this year, 2023. Let's dive into this game a little bit.
All right, let's do it. An interesting game coming off of the disappointing loss last week to Michigan. A change at offensive coordinator. How, and you still talk to the team, to different players. How was the reaction to the change at coordinator? Now it's Juwan Sider and Ty Howell taking over. How were the players responding to those two during the week leading up to the game?
Yeah, really well. I think Bo Prabula said it best in his post-game presser. He said, you know, we didn't flinch when asked, I believe, by Mike Poorman kind of what the team's reaction was to that, you know, Sunday morning throughout the week. And, you know, that's kind of the theme throughout the week in the game that we saw. And, you know, there was a little bit of ups and downs and we didn't, you know, fully run away with the game early, but didn't flinch, had a backup quarterback come in, take over the game and just be in full control, especially with the way the defense was playing, control the clock with the run game. And, you know, they did a really good job responding. I thought earlier on, we opened it up a little bit, had a couple shots. The shot to Cephas, you know, in the end zone was really, really close. That was great defense by the DB. But, you know, slung around a little bit at the beginning. I like to see that. Obviously, don't really know the status is with Drew, but hopefully can get back this week for Michigan State.
Well, we'll get to Bo and his role in the game, but let's talk a little more about the play calling early. I took note of the very first play from scrimmage. It was, like James Franklin said, let's create easy passes for Drew. Mm-hmm. And they did that. I thought that was great as a starting point. What did you think through the rest of the half while Drew was still in the game with the play calling? Did you see any differences?
Yeah, obviously. And that's one thing I told people throughout this past week, that there's not going to be a huge change. It's still the same playbook. You know, it's still the coaches that were under Yurcich. It's not going to just drastically change the play calling. The guys are used to specific plays and the kind of the plays we have scripted for that game. Like you mentioned, though, I feel like we passed a little bit better earlier on. Took a couple shots, not super deep. You know, once Bo got into the game, it turned into a run fest. I mean, I think we had over 15 straight runs at one point. Kind of to be expected with having Bo in the game. Obviously, poses that threat. But you know, I think they did a good job coming in early. The fumble by Nick there kind of stalled a drive that could have put us up by 14 and started to put the game away a little bit. Instead, the fumble kind of brings Rutgers back into it. Yeah, keeps them feeling like they're in the game, and it kind of felt like still a close game at halftime, like it could be anybody's game. So I think they did a good job kind of pulling away in the second half, especially really helped out by our defense with a couple of turnovers. But overall, I think they did a really solid job there as co-offensive coordinators.
There was also in the game, and these are the kind of things that happen. Each game is an independent set of circumstances. Rutgers, to their credit, that first drive after Penn State went 3 and out, they held the ball for 9 minutes, which I think was exactly the kind of game Rutgers wants to play. They wanted to reduce the number of possessions. They wanted to hold on to the ball. But I thought what was also interesting in that drive from Rutgers is they took a page out of Michigan's book. Third and long, Landon, they were looking to run the ball.
No doubt. That's what I mentioned it last week. It's definitely the kryptonite of that third down defense, especially when you got guys up on the line. It's hard to get off those blocks. It's when you're a linebacker pressed up against a guard, you're 220, 225, and you're right already in a phone booth with a guy who's 300 pounds. It normally doesn't go too well for the smaller guy. So they're able to get up on blocks a little bit easier. Like I said, definitely something to look at going forward and just kind of keep an eye on for Manny Diaz to be ready for that. On third down, especially third and medium, be ready for that run up the middle.
I will point out also, you ever hear the expression, Landon, there's lies, damn lies, and statistics. And I use statistics to help my cause all the time. My statistic I want to use is throwing the ball on first down, which you know I'm an advocate of. Going through the stat sheet, it looked to me like, well, Drew was 2 for 3. His one incompletion on first down was when he was hurt and just needed to throw the ball away and get out of the game. Otherwise, 2 for 2 for 26 yards. Bo, his one pass, he threw on first down for 9 yards. So other than the injury throw, they were 3 for 3 for 35 yards throwing the ball on first down. Is that not conclusive evidence that I should be the offensive coordinator, Landon?
Look, that's my top comment here on my notes that I got underlined. Offensive coordinator, Jim. It's like whatever you say. It's like they're listening. I guess they're listening to the radio show, man. I don't know. But really, I do think there is something to that. Like I said, getting ahead and getting ahead of schedule already. You know, being on first down, getting another first down, not even getting a second down. It's great for the offense, builds confidence, starts to drive off well. You know, when you're on your own 25, 2 first downs for an offense is, you know, obviously you want to score, but I've mentioned this in the past, is 2 first downs is considered a win. You're flipping the field. You're giving your punter, by the way, shout out to both specialists, Riley Thompson and Alex Falcons, but Riley Thompson with a huge punt out of the end zone. I think it was over 60 yards. They've both been really spectacular this year. I think they're both trying to get waivers to come back for an extra year. Would be really big on special teams. But yeah, just getting on schedule for offense and just getting the drives jump started, I think just gives the guys a lot of juice and gets everybody going.
There were a couple completions which we haven't seen in a while. Liam Clifford and Omari Evans each got a completion. I think they were both third downs, and they were, you know, the Clifford middle of the field. Omari Evans pass, that's, I thought, showed some real arm talent. I mean, he threaded the needle to get it there, and kudos to Omari Evans for making the play also. When we see those plays as fans, Landon, we say, how come we don't see that more often?
Yeah, you know, sometimes it's hard to get everybody the ball, especially when you're running it as much as we are. It's hard to really spread that ball around to every receiver. We have a lot of talented guys in the room. I mean, Liam had a great spring, great summer. You know, it was expected to do a lot. Amari Evans was a big fan favorite of, you know, spring game too, especially doing up downs on the sidelines after celebrating. I don't know if anybody remembers that from the spring game. That was a good memory. Started doing his touchdown dance, and Franklin sprints down the sideline and starts making him do up downs right there on the sideline. That was a memorable one. But, you know, like I said, it's hard to get these guys the ball. When you get, you know, you see them make a play, and it's really exciting, especially when they're younger guys like Amari Evans, speedster, someone who can kind of break open the game. You know, as a fan, you say, okay, well, how can we find more ways to get him the ball? And I, you know, I think that's something that they're having a conversation in the offensive meeting room as well. How can we find more ways to get these guys the ball? Explosive guys, you know, when you got some speed out at wide out, you want to find a way to get them the ball in space to them. So look to get them a little bit more involved as the season goes on, especially with Trey Wallace out now. You know, for we don't know how long, but got to get your wide receivers going. Got to get guys that can help out Drew and Bo. Creates some separation. I mean, you talk about some of those passes. They were great catches, but still not a ton of separation. I think the announcer even made a comment on that on the game. Mari Evans was really tightly contested, but he made a fantastic catch. But you know, look to get those guys more involved, especially with Ty Hall and Coach Sider taking over. And as we move forward,
I'm hoping so, and I'm hoping we just see more of those passes to the middle of the field. Don't care which receiver, but you know, just use the entire field. It would be nice to see. All right, Landon, we're through quarter number one. We still got a whole lot more to talk about. We'll do that starting right after this break.
Hey guys, this is Andrew from 409 Tailgate Club, here to talk to you about our new coffee barbecue dry rub set. Over the years, we've developed some great tailgate sauces and barbecue dry rubs, but our new coffee rubs are totally unique spice blends, low in sodium, and feature Happy Valley's finest coffee, W.C. Clark's, roasted right in the cheese shop in downtown State College. So head on over to 409tailgateclub.com, grab yourself some coffee rubs, and remember, always tailgate with honor. We are.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
And welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Landon Tengwall. I'm Jim Galante. We're talking about Penn State's 27-6 win over Rutgers on Saturday. Some interesting things. We'll get back to the things on the field, Landon, but really fascinating story. Post-game, Theo Johnson talked to the team. Very interesting. What was your take on – what was that all about, first of all, and what was your take on it?
Yeah, Coach Franklin kind of got a, you know, a little emotional in the presser speaking about it, that, you know, Theo Johnson and a couple other guys stood up and essentially just said, thank you, we appreciate everything you do. Coach Franklin's thing is always just saying, I love you. It's a family atmosphere. And I know to some fans that doesn't matter. I want to win games. It's whatever. But from a player standpoint, from a family standpoint, a family that's committing to a coach, that type of thing in recruiting, it's really cool to know that your coach actually cares about you. There is many programs out there, and trust and believe that the coaches only care about your athletic ability and what you can do for the team. It's not like that here. Coach Franklin makes it very clear that we are a family. And that is also clear through what he says, his actions, you know, everything that I've dealt with through having to step away from football. He has been absolutely amazing. So like I said, some fans, that doesn't mean anything to them, and they want to say, you know, get rid of this guy. But he means a lot to to Penn State, the guys here. And I think it's foolish to think that there's someone out there right now that can do a better job here than him. That's kind of my take on it.
Well, it's interesting. Us old guys remember a coach who was here for many years, Landon, and he talked about success with honor. And I think a lot of us old-time Penn Staters, we don't want to win. We want to win the right way. So when we hear things like this about Coach Franklin, the feeling is, yes, that's the way we want to go. Now, doing what we do here, yep, I'm going to be critical, as you know. But at the same time, it's like you have to admire what Coach Franklin does for the players, not just on the field, but off the field and in life. And as Penn Staters, that's what we want. Okay, so now with that said, Landon, let me go to my criticism, okay?
Let's hear it.
Earlier I talked about going to the stat sheet, and I go to stat sheets when it supports my argument, so you know what's coming. We had a very interesting, Bo Prabula came in because of injury to Drew Aller. Now, we did see Drew Aller, one of the other things that was a little different, it seemed like the team was a little more willing to have Drew run with the ball. A couple quarterback draws, and he was very successful. Of course, him getting injured on one of those running plays may make some people say, well, that's why we don't have him run. But I wanted to throw this statistic out to you and get your reaction. In the first half of the game, when Drew Aller was in the game, Katron Allen had 9 carries for 24 yards. That's less than 3 yards a carry. Nick Singleton had 5 carries for 10 yards. I'm no math major, but that I think comes out to 2 yards per carry. In the second half, with Bo Prabula in the game as a threat to run the ball, Landon, Katron Allen had 7 carries for 45 yards, over 6 yards a carry. Nick Singleton, 6 carries for 52 yards, over 8 yards a carry. Not to mention Bo Prabula, 7 carries, 67 yards, for more than 9 yards a carry. My theory on this is you had a quarterback who was a threat to run the ball on the read option, so the defense couldn't focus on the running back. There you go, Landon. That is why I need to be the offensive coordinator.
Jim, hey, I would say that's a great observation. And that's what I had actually at the top of my notes. I had offensive coordinator Jim was having a grand old time watching Bo Prabula pull that ball. I know you had a good time watching that. So, I mean, it's definitely, like you said, the stats support it. It's definitely true. You have to stay much, you have to respect the quarterback pull a lot more. Yeah, I think Drew did have the highest yards per carry, but I mean, Bo averaged around 9 per carry as well. He's just such a threat in that run game. I mean, you see, and he tucks it down and he puts his shoulder down into guys that he doesn't have too much remorse for his body. Obviously, definitely interested to see Bo pass it a little bit more. Also saw a little bit of Bo's only technical forward pass was a TTO, is what we call it. It's a triple throw option. So I wanted to touch on that for the fans. So you have the RPO, where obviously you're looking at one of your wide receivers, whether that be on a little bubble screen or maybe a quick slant. Well, when he pulls it from the running back to decide to run the ball, he has a wide receiver at this point, who I believe was Tyler Warren out there, that kind of stands there waiting. So he keeps the cornerback honest. So now when Bo is pulling the ball, the cornerback has to stay on that receiver that's all the way on the sideline, because if he crashes down and tries to contain Bo, well, now he can just dump it off straight down the sideline to the wide receiver. So that's the kind of stuff that you start to see get a little more intricate as in the past couple years, as the game, especially the offensive game, has evolved to try to figure out how to, you know, create mismatches against all these great defenses. And that's something that you see now is the triple throw option. So you get that from Bo. Did see when he came in, we had to use 2 timeouts because of personnel changes. And one was Nick Singleton got a little banged up there and had to get a tight end in late. But that is something that I know Coach Franklin does not like, having to use his timeouts. He wants to keep those for the end of half and the game. So I know that that probably upset him a little bit, but so things move a little bit shaker. But Bo, I mean, got in there with a lot of poise. You know, see him fumble the ball, pick it up, go in the end zone, which I think he kind of robbed Nick Singleton of a touchdown there. So that's got to be a little frustrating. But kind of everything Bo did, it was just like, oh, it's just going well. The offense was just running really smoothly with him. Obviously, over 15, almost 20 straight runs with Bo in the game. If he does play this week, I wouldn't expect it to be much different. I don't think he's going to come in and just start slinging the ball. But that's definitely something I'm, you know, curious to look at when, you know, we know how Will Levis can throw the ball. And when he came in, he was really kind of strictly a runner. Same thing going all the way back with our pass backup running quarterbacks, kind of just use them specifically to run. So I am interested to see, you know, how we're going to go about that. If Bo, you know, does continue to play, I'll let him sling it around a little bit. You know, how is that going to go?
Well, I'm glad you brought up that the triple, what do you call it? TTO, the triple TTO. Threat option. And what I thought was also important is it wasn't as if there were no passes called. There were a couple plays where Bo was just, he was very decisive. I mean, the seas parted for him and where he was rolling out and just said, well, you know, no need to pass the ball. I'm not sure if anybody was open. But he had an easy big game. But also in that triple threat option, it was really obvious to the casual fan all three options were there, because once he pulled it, you still didn't know if Bo was going to run it or throw it. He forced the defender to make a decision. It's either me or him. Who are you going to cover? And my point isn't so much, I'm not trying to lobby to say Bo Prabula should be out there playing. I think what I'm trying to say is the fact that he's a threat to pull it means the defense has to be honest. I would like to see Drew Aller do that. And I know a counter argument might be, well, that's how he got hurt, by running the ball. But I think if he's, especially if he's running off the options, he's running wide, has an option to get down or get out of bounds. But I thought it really made a difference for the running backs, the fact that the quarterback was the threat.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, it keeps that defense honest. They have to play that quarterback. We saw Nick Singleton one of the first times in a little while yesterday get outside, got outside on a little outside zone run to the left there and ended up getting a little banged up, but I think got over 15 yards on that run there. Definitely want to see more of that out of him. We talked about in the, you know, past couple shows, we got to get Nick Singleton in space, get him the ball, get him outside where he can really use that speed. I think Catron Allen's a lot more efficient in between the tackles and putting that shoulder down and just getting yards. I mean, he's gonna churn those legs until he can't anymore. You know, I think one challenge for Ty Howe and Juwan Sider is really to figure out how to use these backs just more efficiently. You know what I mean? Maybe Nick Singleton, not as many carries in between the tackle, get him out on some different specialty outside zone type of plays, on pin and pull, some pitches, you know, things of that nature. Just get him in space, keep Catron churning between those tackles. But I think you got to continue to use Bo either way, whatever, you know, if Drew starting, still got to get him packages. And we saw that, you know, throughout the Rutgers game. I think Bo came in a couple of times before Drew was actually out. But got to keep in the mix. It makes the offense so dynamic and really just poses a big threat in the run game, which is kind of clearly what Penn State wants to do in these past couple games.
And you mentioned, you know, getting Nick Singleton on the outside and that run you're referring to, being at the stadium, you could just feel the whole crowd. Here it is. You know, you saw Nick Singleton on the edge, and you know, really crazy good things can happen for Penn State whenever that happens. So you mentioned the pin and pull, which is, if you think back to Catron Allen last week against Michigan, that was the play where he had his big 39-yard run, correct?
Exactly. And then just for the audience, it's called pin and pull because lineman or tight end is, you know, pinning the defensive end, defensive tackle down, and then you got guys pulling around. So different kind of variation of outside zone. And obviously I have to give a shout out real quick, and we haven't talked too much about it these past shows, but the offensive line has been really spectacular, and especially a group of guys that I mean, I got it through all throughout recruiting, really took a lot of criticism over the past, you know, 10 plus years even. So, you know, over 234 yards on the ground, no sacks. I just had to give a quick shout out to them. I think they've been really good this year, even in the bigger games, allowed some sacks, but overall have held up really nice. And it hasn't been any, you know, finger pointing at the offensive line, which is kind of what we're used to from a lot of the fans. So it's one of those luxuries to not have to complain about your offensive line. And now that they're not the, you know, the vocal point of the complaints, it's easy to get complacent with that, because when the offensive line is just doing well, you don't talk about them. It's a very, you know, thankless job. So I have to give my guys a shout out there on the offensive line.
That's an important point. And anonymous is typically good for the offensive line, but I think rushing for well over 200 yards, not allowing a sack, that's like comparable to throwing a shutout, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's big. And we're going to need that out of this last game. And then the bowl game, the offensive line is going to have to continue to produce. So going to have to rely on them and the guys in the backfield to get some great push up front.
All right. Well, we're hoping to see that. It's Friday night against Michigan State, which is kind of interesting, a Friday night game. As a fan, I love that. You know, don't make me wait till Saturday. Give me my fix of football already on Friday night after eating some leftover turkey from Thursday. And then hopefully a really nice bowl game. All right, that's it for this segment. I promise. Next quarter, we're going to talk defense, Landon. I look forward to that.
Hey guys, this is Andrew from 409 Tailgate Club, here to talk to you about our new coffee barbecue dry rub set. Over the years, we've developed some great tailgate sauces and barbecue dry rubs, but our new coffee rubs are totally unique spice blends, low in sodium, and feature Happy Valley's finest coffee, W.C. Clark's, roasted right in the cheese shop in downtown State College. So head on over to 409tailgateclub.com, grab yourself some coffee rubs, and remember, always tailgate with honor. We are.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Landon Tangwall. I'm Jim Galante. We are talking Penn State Rutgers football. Let's devote these last couple segments talking about the defense, Landon, because another impressive performance by them. Let's take a look at a couple of the plays, big plays that happened, and I'd like you, from your experience, to be able to walk us through it, because these things don't just happen. They are by design, and I want to start with KJ Winston's interception. There was a lot going on in that play. Could you run us through it?
Yeah, so the defense was – Manny decided to bring a cornerback blitz, which is called Chop. So they brought Kalen King and Johnny Dixon actually off the edge. We saw a couple times. Johnny Dixon with it's what it seems like his weekly sack, by the way. I think Coach Franklin made a remark about Johnny Dixon leading cornerbacks in sacks. So he's done a great job with that all year. But yeah, especially with, you know, a quarterback that doesn't throw a ton, more of a running quarterback. We were talking off air kind of how that rotation works. So when the cornerback blitz comes, the safety is outside of the hash. So he's on the left side of the hash there. So he has to get over real quick and make that play, because if that cornerback blitz comes and the quarterback sees it really quickly and gets it right to that wide receiver, he's got to do is, you know, break one tackle. He's in space, you know, he can get off, score a touchdown. So it was really important for KJ to get over there quickly. But at the same time, you don't want to give that away to the quarterback. That's the type of things that the quarterbacks are looking for, is like safety alignment. If the safety is outside of the hash, well, now we expect Chop. That's type of things that Cliff would be really good at, especially older quarterbacks, just identifying that type of thing. So KJ did a great job flying over there. Normally the wide receiver, when you get Chop, will, the announcer talked about it if you were watching the TV copy, kind of slow down and give the quarterback a second to get him the ball real quick, because it takes a lot of time for that safety to get over. Well, the wide receiver kind of just drifted upfield, and the quarterback laid it up, and KJ Winston's going to take that every time. I mean, that's a guy who, I've talked about him before, his preparation is unmatched. I know he's the type of guy, his instincts are improving, not only because of just his natural ability, but also the work he puts in off the field, the film study. You can just tell he's really comfortable back there, starting to look like a guy we've had in the past, Jair Brown. Really impressive safety. I kind of see flashes in him, man. He's all over the field, starting to become a little bit of a ball hawk. So, you know, I think this defense is, I don't think they're not going to see much drop off at all next year. We obviously have a lot of guys leaving, but we have some really impressive young guys. And I know we're talking about KJ right now too, but I do want to get to young Tony Rojas here in a second as well.
Yeah, we'll get to, we're devoting a lot of the time now to the defense. And again, we were talking a bit off the air, and I said what I found impressive about KJ Winston was that it's not just being fast. And I made the comparison to Abdul Carter last year. Not they're the same player physically, but reaction time. It's not just about being fast, but how quickly they react. It's also about study, isn't it?
Absolutely. You know, as I mentioned before, KJ is one of the hardest working guys in that facility. When you go in, he'll, you know, you'll go in for a 5:30 a.m. workout, and he's already, you see him out there on the field already warming up, doing his stretches. And it's like, how long you been here? He's, I've been here for an hour, man. I already hit the hot tubs, the cold tubs, stretched. Now I'm getting my warm up in. He's that type of guy. That's the type of guy you want on your team. I'll say it right now, put money on it, type of guy that's going to be a captain in the future. Those are the type of guys you want leading your team if you're Coach Franklin. Just people that are going to fall in line behind that and be like, okay, you know, I want to go do that. I want to go get extra work with KJ. You know, you see the type of production he's putting out, and then you see that, you know, the type of work that he's putting in. It's like, okay, well, maybe this is what it takes to make an impact. So it brings other guys along too. It has that impact on other guys on the team.
You also made reference to Johnny Dixon, you know, with his weekly sack as it seemed. And, you know, sometimes you watch just a replay of it. Oh, he's starting from his position. He comes in untouched, or even if there's a back there, it's amazing how well he does in dodging that blocker, you know, to get to the quarterback. He just seems very good at it. But it's not just as simple as putting a cornerback up there on the line of scrimmage, is it? There's a lot more going on. Could you kind of walk us through, you know, why, you know, the opposing team, they have to deal with other things that are going on along the line of scrimmage? There's more to it than just, oh, we'll send the cornerback on this play.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and the quarterback is so occupied with what's going on right in front of him, the linebackers, the D-line. He's trying to get everything straight. So a lot of times, especially when you're on that, you're on the short side of the field, you're to the sideline, it is when you want to bring that cornerback blitz, because you don't want to bring it from the long side of the field. It'll take a lot longer for the quarterback to get there. So it's really good. And honestly, it always feels like Manny Diaz brings it when it's kind of unexpected. It's like, you know, you're not sitting there waiting for it. It's just out of nowhere. You see that cornerback start to creep off the edge, and then he comes. And it's like, because they're never ready for it. It seems like, you know, every once in a while there is the running back, and Johnny makes it. He'll make some great moves on the running back. But it seems like he comes free so often, and that's really a credit to Coach Manny Diaz and how he's scheming that up. You know, they do a lot of stuff. I mean, he's one of the most confusing defensive coordinators in all of college football. You can trust and believe that going against that every day in practice. It wasn't fun having to deal with those blitzes. He comes with some really creative blitzes that every week it's something different. But they just do a great job of setting that up. The offense doesn't expect it, you know, putting some chaos in front of it, in front of the quarterback's face with that linebackers maybe pressing up, showing blitz, and then bringing the cornerback blitz from the side. Because the quarterback, he'll adjust the protection. If you see a linebacker, you know, start to creep up a little bit, well, now I might shift the protection to the right, and now we're bringing the cornerback blitz from the left. That's the type of mind games that Manny Diaz plays with these offensive coordinators, and it's really fun to watch. He's a extremely impressive defensive coordinator.
You mentioned about it's like he comes up with something new every week. How does that happen? How does that evolve? Is it Manny Diaz watching the opposing team and he finds something there? Or is it just he's very creative, so he'll come up with something new every week?
Yeah, I think it's definitely a mixture of both. Sometimes you see things, you're like, okay, we can exploit XYZ. They don't do this well, or this quarterback, you know, there was something on Tulia where he would always drift back to his right side, would never really roll out left. Things of that nature. So now if he's known to only drift right, maybe you want to make sure when you bring that cornerback blitz, you are bringing that from the right side when you're on the short side of the field. So you know, okay, we're only going to call that in, you know, certain situations. But, you know, and then there's also, you know, you look around college football, look around the NFL, there's a lot of copycat stuff. You know, throughout the season, you know, you see other teams do stuff. You say, hey, you know, how can we implement that into our game? I mean, you know, you might put a little bit of a twist on it to fit your defense, your scheme. But there is a lot of copycat. And also when you have this good of a defense, it's a lot easier to do this. You know, when you have a bunch of slappies out there running around, it's not as easy. It's not as easy to pull off these type of blitzes. So, I mean, when you got Abdul Carter, you know, Johnny Dixon coming off the edge, two great defensive ends, all that stuff. I mean, it's a lot easier to pull off these blitzes. So, you know, but definitely shout out to, you know, Coach Diaz. He's doing his thing, and I've seen him up for a couple of awards, and he deserves to win all of them.
You mentioned having to face this in practice, and I know you were usually guard as opposed to tackle, but tell me what makes Chop Robinson so good. And when I watch the game, sometimes I find myself in watching when Penn State's on defense, I stop watching the ball and I just start watching Chop Robinson because he's always seemed to be making a play. What makes him so good?
It's easy. His explosiveness. He has had it since high school. We go back to junior year of high school. We scrimmaged our high schools, and number one thing that jumps out when you're watching him on tape is he gets off the ball. Sometimes you almost think he's offsides. It's like, there's no way he was onsides. And you go back at the tape, and sure enough, he just had the perfect get off. And that's what you saw in his big sack fumble. Just completely beat the off the tackle off the line. He has great hands too. Gave him the hand swipe, bent the edge. And then that's another thing that's kind of taken for granted. It is not that easy to bend like that. These DNs, that's why you see them. If you ever see them running those hoops and trying to bend and not fall, that's huge, because you're trying to bend that edge against that offensive tackle and rip through, try to either get that holding penalty or make the quarterback step up, or if the quarterback's drifting back, get that sack as Chop did. He's elite premier edge rusher. I mean, he's going to go first round. And there's a reason that Penn State is number two in sacks in all of college football and number five in tackles for loss. I just saw those stats after this past game. They're a dominant defense. And then you obviously not only Chop Robinson, who has been really spectacular, but Adisa Isaac, who I think actually has more sacks on the season than Chop Robinson, has really been impressive. And he's really came on this year, especially in the run game too. He has been really dominant with a lot of tackles for loss. So, you know, having those two guys, you know, anchoring your defensive line, it makes it a lot easier for everybody else. Claps in the pocket, defensive tackles are doing a good job, you know, putting some pressure on the quarterback yesterday. So overall, the defensive line and Deion Barnes, I think, is doing a really fantastic job, and they're feeding off of Manny Diaz and kind of what he's giving them, especially with using the linebackers, as we talk about cornerbacks, those type of blitzes. That helps the defensive line get home even easier, because now the offensive line running backs and protection are worried about all these exotic blitzes, and now you create one-on-one matchups with Chop Robinson against a Rutgers right tackle, and normally we know who's going to be favored in that matchup. So it is about getting one-on-one battles as well, making sure that they don't double team Chop, that type of thing. Those are things that go into scheming up the game as well.
And you brought up a good point mentioning Adisa Isaac. You have him on one side, Chop on the other, or you have Deny Dennis Sutton out there, who is your third guy, which is just incredible. And it's funny, you talked about the matchup with the tackle on the offensive side of the ball. And I can't believe I'm saying this, but this has actually happened multiple times. If I'm watching Penn State play defense, I don't pay attention to the opposing offensive line or even what number, who's there. I have actually begun to feel sorry for the tackles on the opposing teams. Number 70 on Rutgers. And I could go back week to week. It's like I find a guy, I say, oh, man. I feel bad for that guy, Landon.
It is, man. I was also watching some of the Michigan game, and they were even talking about it during the Michigan Maryland game. They were talking about the Michigan left tackle having a real problem with speed rush against Chop Robinson the previous week. You know, everybody sees it, and it's as offensive tackle, and you know you're about to go against a very good edge rusher who has a lot of speed, and he can also pull rush you too, Chop Robinson and Adisa. It's a little bit of a lonely feeling to be on an island with those guys. It's not, you know, unless you're Olu Fashanu, you don't feel too secure. If you look back against UMass, that right tackle had a rough day against Adisa Isaac. I think he gave up almost three sacks. I mean, so, and it's one of those things too, when you get beat, it's like, okay, I gave up a sack. I can't do anything else. It's like, okay, you can give up one sack in a game, but you know, you start to feel like, okay, I can't do anything else. And you get nervous and it starts to kind of teeter off and it goes south real quick.
That is it for quarter three. We got more to go. Stick with us.
Hey guys, this is Andrew from 409 Tailgate Club, here to talk to you about our new coffee barbecue dry rub set. Over the years, we've developed some great tailgate sauces and barbecue dry rubs, but our new coffee rubs are totally unique spice blends, low in sodium, and feature Happy Valley's finest coffee, W.C. Clark's, roasted right in the cheese shop in downtown State College. So head on over to 409tailgateclub.com, grab yourself some coffee rubs, and remember, always tailgate with honor. We are.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. He's Landon. I'm Jim. We're talking Penn State, Rutgers. Off the air, we're talking about a lot of other stuff, which we're not going to get into on the air, Landon. Let's move on. When we left things in quarter three, we were talking defense, and there's still more to talk about. One of the guys you and I mentioned, I want to throw out some kudos to, is Kobe King. He had 10 tackles, and I'm going to tie this into another statistic here. Kyle Manonghi, he's the running back from Rutgers. I've seen him play several times this year, Landon. He's really good, and what he is more than anything else is he's a tough runner. This defense held him to 2.4 yards per carry, and that's, you know, congratulations to the defensive tackles, the whole defensive line, but also Kobe King is part of that.
Yeah, Kobe King's playing lights out this year. He's someone that isn't getting a ton of attention in the media. He's leading Penn State defense in tackles almost every single game with double-digit tackles. You know, that, and a lot of them also are not, you know, 7-8 yards deep. They are at the line of scrimmage, you know, almost, you know, TFL range. And that's so important, especially with last year, you know, with Kobe even being a little bit younger. There were some questions at middle linebacker and stuff like that, and I think he has completely shut everybody up, and he is leading that defensive group there at middle linebacker and making some really not big splash plays, but those important plays that you need your middle linebacker to make, those guys that have over 100 tackles in a season, that type of deal. And he's been really fantastic all season long, so I think Penn State fans have something to look forward, you know, going into next year, especially with this linebacking core, even though we're losing a couple guys, you know, really impressive group with Manny Diaz.
Yes, they really are. And you mentioned, you know, Kobe King making some of those plays at the line of scrimmage. We also have to point out the defensive tackles. That was the big question mark coming into this season on defense. I think they've pretty much answered those questions, but it also leads to, Landon, one of my favorite quotes from James Franklin this year, and I think he just said it a few weeks ago, the defense has to earn the right to have those third and long plays where they can do the things that we as fans all love, where they get the sacks and the pressure on the quarterback. But the way they earn the right to do that is with the guys like Kobe King and the defensive tackles doing the dirty work on first and second down and stopping the run.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's like you mentioned, it kind of a reward. That's especially how the defensive tackles, Kobe King, those guys that get off the field on third down, that they aren't in on those third down packages because it's more of a passing down, and those defensive tackles and Kobe, you know, more run stuffing guys, you know, that's their excitement. They want to get, you know, if we get this defense a third down, I get a break. I get to go off the field. You know, it's a little bit, you know, especially when you're a big guy, a little deeper into the game, you start to breathe a little heavy. So, oh man, third down. Thank God I get to jog off this field right now. So you know, there definitely is a little bit of a excitement to get to third down. And then the guys that are still on the field for third down, I mean, they have fun with those packages. You know, I talked to, you know, Curtis, Abdul, you know, Chop, all those guys. They love the 7-up look. They love confusing the defense, you know, faking, coming at them, pulling back, just kind of toying with them. The defense has a lot of fun with that, and they create a lot of turnovers and sacks off of it. But that's just a credit to how mature this defense is and how well Manny Diaz has them prepared each week.
And I got to think those guys who they get off for third down. Yes, it's a break, but that's also a pat on the back. You did your job.
Absolutely.
You did your job. Now, we were talking about the linebackers and how they'll be, you know, the next group. And you can say this about the entire defense. There seems like there's always at each position, the new guy coming up. We talked about KJ Winston. You know, he's one of my favorite guys. He got the interception this weekend, but he does such a great job coming up and stopping the run. But another young guy, and you mentioned earlier in the show, is Tony Rojas. He's the linebacker. You know, when Abdul Carter still has another year, but, you know, Curtis Jacobs is probably moving on. Tony Rojas is probably the next in line to be the next big deal.
Yeah, 100%. He is a really talented guy, 2,000-yard rusher back there at running back. And in high school, he won Gatorade Player of the Year for Virginia. So really athletic. Came here, turned him into a really good Sam linebacker. Came in looking like a stick figure, and you don't even recognize him now. He looks like Abdul. He looks like Curtis. Big, thick kid now. I mean, I think he might have put on almost 25, 30 pounds as he's been in the program, and that's not only a testament to the work that he's put in, but, I mean, the coaches, the nutrition, that type of stuff, we don't really talk about that. That's huge. Coming in for a freshman to take that really seriously is really impressive, because you see a lot of freshmen, they get to college, and, you know, even though this is your job and you're a college football player, you now have that freedom. You can go to McDonald's whenever you want. You can order DoorDash to your house. It's a lot easier to not be, you know, mom's not making you dinner. So you can make bad choices, essentially. And Tony has clearly made really good choices with all his habits. Anytime he gets in the game, it just kind of feels like, you know, something good happens. He's always making a play, really limited time against Rutgers. And, you know, I think he had a 1.5 TFLs, a couple, maybe three or four tackles. He had to just, anytime he's in the game, he makes an impact. We saw what he did in Maryland with the forced fumble on the sack, then came back with the pick. You know, it's hard when he's someone who's behind Curtis Jacobs, and then as well Dominic DeLuca, who is a big time playmaker for this team. Everybody knows special teams captain. So sometimes it's hard to get, when your defense is this talented, it's hard to get guys on the field, but it's almost, you know, you look at the stats and what he's produced when he's on the field, it's like, how do you not get Tony Rojas on the field? He's a freshman. He has a long career ahead of him here where I think he's going to be an absolute stud, but it's like, you know, he's a freshman, but he makes fantastic plays. You almost want to get him back out on the field. How can you find a way to get Tony Rojas on the field with these other guys?
Now, it's interesting. You mentioned he's listed as a Sam linebacker, and you mentioned like Kobe King is in the middle. It took a while for him, you know, as a you could see his maturity, and there's more responsibilities at middle linebacker. Is that something, you know, how tough is it for, say, a Tony Rojas, who's in as a Sam linebacker, to play in the middle? Is that something maybe we see in another year from him? What goes into that, and is he a possibility to get there eventually?
Yeah, that's hard. And I saw some fans actually talking about this on Twitter. You know, can Tony Rojas get reps at, you know, another linebacker position? Can we find a way to get him on the field, kind of like I was mentioning? And that is hard, especially for a young guy. When you come in, you learn one position. When I came in, I was a tackle, and I just knew tackle. I didn't know guard, which I ended up playing. But when you're a young freshman, it's hard. You don't have a full understanding of the playbook. You really are just trying to know each week exactly what you have to do with this one position. And especially at middle linebacker, there's a lot more responsibility. Sam is probably the easiest linebacker position. It's a lot more free, a lot more roaming. And I think that's where Tony Rojas does a really good job. And I think we could even see him kind of turn into what Abdul Carter has kind of turned into, with coming off the edge a little bit, being a little bit more diverse in the packages and how we use him. Really, I mean, you saw him rushing the passer there and get that sack fumble against Tulia in Maryland. So I think there's a lot of ways you can use him. It is really difficult to play a position you're not used to, especially as a freshman. So I think some fans are really eager to see him get in. But like I said, it's hard when you have a fourth-year guy in Curtis Jacobs that you're trying to get reps. Obviously, Dominic DeLuca, who's always wreaking havoc and making plays, also plays Sam, plays both. So it's hard to try, like I said, to get everybody reps when you have this many good players. But you do have to, you don't want to put your guys in a bad position just because he's a good player and a great playmaker. You don't want to then put him at a deficit and put him at a position that he's not comfortable at. And then, you know, what you may give up a play and lose a little bit of confidence there. And obviously he's playing with a lot of confidence right now whenever he gets in the game and he's fired up. I mean, you see it from him every time he makes a big play. He lets everybody know. So, you know, I definitely think we'll continue to see a lot more of him. But, you know, next season, I expect him to take over that role for Curtis Jacobs. And then, you know, you got Kobe King, who's playing lights out. Obviously, Abdul Carter, going to be a first-round pick next year. I mean, no one moves like that. He's Micah Parsons reincarnated. And then young Tony Rojas taking over at Sam. So I think the fans have a lot to be excited about with this whole defense. Obviously, Denai at the end have some really impressive guys. And then one name for guys that, you know, everybody keep an eye on is Jameel Lyons. Young kid, made a couple plays earlier on when we were, you know, playing some worse teams where younger guys got a little bit more opportunity. Really impressive. So we have some really good young guys, you know, these past couple of years that are going to make a big impact now and going into next season.
And I think it's really important to point out something you told me, like earlier in the show or even off the air, I was talking about how some of these guys, they're not just quick, but their reaction time is so good. When we were talking about KJ Winston, but you pointed out it's not just because he has those tools and is instinctive, it's film study, it's experience to get to that point. And Abdul Carter is probably also an example. You're talking about him now lining up on the edge. And I think we as fans kind of forget these players, they need to be in the program for a little while to learn these multiple positions and for a guy like Manny Diaz to use them in several different ways.
Yeah, it's hard. And like I mentioned, for a young guy, you know, kind of talking about with Tony, where you have the options coming into college, you now have freedom, you can kind of do whatever you want. It's similar with, you know, studying plays, studying film. The coaches, you know, we don't, you know, obviously we have film study throughout the week, but you're expected to do a certain amount of film study and, you know, watching plays on your own, watching third down cutups, watching red zone, all this type of stuff that they have available for us. And, you know, I think it's clear that these guys on the defense, especially young guys, are taking it really seriously. And it's really easy freshman year to come in and say, hey, I'm a freshman, I'm just going to take it easy. There's not a lot of expectations on my plate. You know, I'm just going to redshirt this year anyways. Well, guys, a lot of these guys on this defense, you're not seeing that. You're seeing they're prepared. They're ready to go. When their number is called, they want to go in there and make a play, make a splash. And I think that's just kind of what the defense feeds off of, because how many talented guys, how many turnovers they create. Well, now the young guys want to be a part of that too. They want to say, hey, I made impact in this game. I got in. I did, you know, I got a sack. I got a fumble, a pick. So it's really contagious. And like I said, this all kind of goes back to Manny Diaz. He is one of the best defensive coordinators I've ever been around. A really impressive guy and always has a really good message and is a fantastic motivator for his players.
All right, Landon. Unfortunately, that is going to have to be it for our show today. I thought this was a good one. We learned a lot. Interesting game with Rutgers. I don't think the team got enough credit for it. It's a good win. Rutgers is a tough team. They're better. This isn't the typical Rutgers that we've seen over the years. This coming week, Friday night, it's playing Michigan in Detroit at an NFL stadium. That should be fun. Next week, you and I will talk about that. Meantime, thank you all for listening to the show. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Hey guys, this is Andrew from 409 Tailgate Club, here to talk to you about our new coffee barbecue dry rub set. Over the years, we've developed some great tailgate sauces and barbecue dry rubs, but our new coffee rubs are totally unique spice blends, low in sodium, and feature Happy Valley's finest coffee, W.C. Clark's, roasted right in the cheese shop in downtown State College. So head on over to 409tailgateclub.com, grab yourself some coffee rubs, and remember, always tailgate with honor. We are